Welcome to episode 286 of the Truth Quest podcast, The Truth About Mitch McConnell. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, share episodes with your friends, and support the podcast by shopping at truthquestshirtfactory.com. I want to make it clear that I am not a fan of the majority of the leadership class at the national level. As a matter of fact, I hold most of them with the highest contempt. Suffice it to say, it has something to do with our leadership class enriching themselves while doing nothing to stop or even slow down the decline of this once great nation. Whether that be culturally, spiritually, financially, constitutionally, or militarily, these people do not do their job. They don't enforce the rule of law. They don't avoid wars and conflicts overseas. They don't stop the intelligence community from meddling in other countries' affairs. They don't even stop the intelligence community from censoring American speech. They do not do their most basic job, which is to act as oversight over the executive branch. Few people embody what I hate about the leadership class than Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who recently announced that he was stepping down from his leadership position in November. My immediate response to that announcement was, "Why wait, Mitch? You looking for one more go at screwing with the American people out of real Republican candidates? Those that love the country, love the Constitution, love the rule of law, hate wasteful spending, hate war, and hate crooked politicians?" While I cannot honor the motherly advice of, if you can't say something nice about someone, don't say anything at all, especially given this topic, I'm going to at least lead with the good about McConnell and end with the bad and the ugly. The good. He has been described by some as the most successful Machiavellian Republican leader in modern history, meaning he is or was an ends justify the means type of person. The problem with Mitch is and was his ends always hurt the party he was supposedly leading and by default hurt the country as well. His cheerleaders argued not only knew how to make the sausage in D.C., but he was willing to make it. I would throw in the fact that he prevented Merrick Garland from a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court. What a disaster that would have been. Look at how he has weaponized and publicized the Department of Injustice. He's a complete disgrace, a political whore of the highest order. Along those same lines, I would throw in the fact that he opposed and or blocked dozens of Obama federal court nominees. Those are all good things. That's it. I mean, I dug for some positive things to say about the dude, and all I could come up with was, he was good at his job. Even the people of Kentucky hate this guy. In July 2022, Morning Consult found he had a 62% disapproval rating among Kentucky voters. That's quite a feat. Unfortunately for the country as a whole, this asshole lived in a power struggle bubble and clearly could not have cared less about the end result of his actions or inactions. Which leads me to the bad. Let's start with his wife, Elaine Chao. Peter Schweitzer's book, Secret Empires, has done the most comprehensive reporting on Elaine that I've seen. In the book, Schweitzer revealed how Mitch and his wife received a gift from Chao's shipping mogul father, James Chao, whose company, Foremost Group, was doing massive deals with the Chinese government. The gift was reported to be between $5 million and $25 million. Elaine Chao's sister, Angela Chao, who died when her car was submerged in a pond in Texas in February of 2024, just weeks before Mitch announced his resignation, she was the CEO of Foremost Group and sat on the board of the Communist Chinese government's Bank of China. Pause. I just want you to understand how incestuous Washington is. Trump nominated then-Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's wife to be Secretary of Transportation. Not to get too far off path here, but this serves as another example of Trump's naivety during his first term. I can just imagine Trump's thinking at the time, well, yeah, sure, Mitch hates my guts, but we have to work together for at least the next 4 years, so I'll grease the skids by giving his old lady a nice cushy job. Then Mitch, of course, proceeded to stab Trump in the back over and over and over again. Then the death of Angela Chao followed shortly by Mitch's announcement. Oh, and by the way, her death was originally ruled an accident, but just yesterday, as I was preparing this episode, the New York Post reported that the sheriff in the jurisdiction where the accident occurred announced that he is still investigating the crash as a criminal matter. Anyways, The multi-million dollar gift from Father James to Mitch and Elaine came in April of 2008. It was supposedly in honor of Elaine's mother after her death. The gift contributed to a sevenfold increase in Mitch's wealth. Schweitzer's book further revealed that Angela Chow was appointed to the Chinese State Bank 10 days after President Trump was elected. Then, after Elaine's appointment as Trump's transportation secretary, China's government-owned China State Shipbuilding Corporation made a deal with the Chow family's foremost group to purchase 10 ships, which effectively increased the Chow's family fleet by nearly 50%. Oh, what a tangled web. Oh, I'm not done yet. Before Mitch married Elaine in 1993, he was a harsh China critic. Not surprisingly, he softened to the point where nowadays, he, like his China-born wife, is more of an apologist. He's helped China escape trade penalties due to human rights abuses and attempted to defend it from the consequences of its notorious currency manipulation practices. If you pay the least bit of attention to real news, you can clearly see the long game that the Chinese are playing with America's political class. The Biden crime family and their exorbitant monetary gains from doing business with the CCP is just the tip of the iceberg, as the wealth generation of McConnell-Chow partnership demonstrates. James Chow's business is financially entangled with the Chinese government. Mitch's father-in-law and sister-in-law, while American citizens, are active board members on a key sector of China's military-industrial complex. Being in favor of our Chinese adversary built the family fortune. Remaining in favor would obviously be advantageous. The thought of losing favor would force a choice between what's best for personal wealth and what's best for America, a choice Mitch made many years ago. Continuing with the bad, some detractors describe Mitch as a, quote, sick F-word due to his pursuit of inflicting more misery and death on the people of Ukraine. Of course, he has lots of company in that pursuit with his colleagues in D.C., again, demonstrating why most of those in leadership at the national level should be held with the highest levels of contempt. Mitch recently argued that America's support for Ukraine is in America's own direct interest because degrading Russia helps to deter China. David Stockton wrote, quote, "What kind of sick F-word would demolish an entire nation and slaughter tens of thousands of its citizens in order to weaken its neighbor and historic superpower, all for the purpose of sending a cannon shot across the bow of rulers 3,600 miles away, and rulers at that who are no boon to their own citizens, but also pose no threat to the liberty and safety of the people of Kentucky or any other part of the United States," end quote. Mitch loves the idea of sending a generation of Ukrainian men into the meat grinder while explaining to the dumbed-down American public that by funding the war between Ukraine and Russia, it serves to weaken Russia and serves as a deterrent to China. Are we supposed to revel in how good Mitch is at his job in this instance? I mean, over $100 billion to Ukraine. How much money did Mitch and the other sociopaths allocate to solve problems here at home? Homelessness, mental illness, the freaking border, the national debt, price inflation, East Palestine, Ohio, the devastating fires in Maui. The dude literally has no soul. Just like all the other sick you-know-whats up there in D.C., like Biden and Pelosi, McCarthy, Schiff, Cheney, Swalwell, the list goes on and on. So we looked at the good, what little there was, and then we looked at the bad. Now let's look at the ugly. I want to credit my favorite commentator, Tara Servatius, for this insight. She brilliantly points out that the first thing she does every day, she goes to Google and puts Mitch's name in the search box, along with some verbiage describing the news of the day. Other than issuing repeated condemnations of Trump, or back in the day, the Tea Party, Mitch never had shit to say about the most important issues facing the nation. Now, I will be the first to admit that he's not the only Republican leader who refuses to speak out, as has been obvious for years with the likes of Kevin McCarthy, Tim Scott, John Thune, John Cornyn, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Tom Tillis, and Mitt Romney. But this episode isn't about them. And none of those people hold the title of Senate Majority or Senate Minority Leader. In the absence of a Republican president, Mitch was supposedly the leader of the party, and as the leader, he remained silent on most major issues. As you very well know, for years, the doomsday cult, formerly known as the Democratic Party, has run roughshod over the country. They have academia in their pocket, as they do Hollywood, and the majority of media outlets. The judiciary in some areas are completely in their pocket. The federal bureaucracy and, unfortunately, the leadership of the National Republican Party are all in the pocket of the doomsday cult formerly known as the Democratic Party. You will rarely, if ever, find a press release or a tweet from Mitch where he raised hell over some of the most important issues over the last decade. I'm referring to major violations of laws, norms, and constitutional rights, as well as the failure to enforce laws that are already on the books. Here are some examples of Mitch's silence. He never spoke out against the illegal spying on Americans. Same for the treatment by the Chinese of the Muslim Uyghurs. At least he didn't make excuses for the treatment like President Biden did. He never spoke out about the intel operation against the Trump campaign. He held up the building of Trump's border wall. Remember when Trump tried to repeal Obamacare? Who helped block that? Well, that would be Mitch. Nor did he say anything about the Trump-Russia collusion hoax. He actually facilitated some of the congressional investigations. He allowed the deep state to tar and harass Trump for 4 straight years. You want to tell me he wasn't read into the fact that the whole scheme was bullshit? He never spoke out about the massive voter fraud in the 2020 election. COVID? Do you think Mitch stood up to mandates and lockdowns and printing money to pay people to stay home and causing generation-high inflation? What about January 6th? Hell, he went along with the charade. I think he was in the front row of Brian Sicknick's funeral where all those sociopaths lied to the American people that he was killed by protesters. Has he spoken out or tried to help the illegal detention, persecution, and prosecution of January 6th defendants in direct violation of their Sixth Amendment rights? You know, speedy trials? What about the open border and the 10 million illegal immigrants allowed into the country just under Biden's watch? What has Mitch said about that? Not a damn thing. Has he ever spoken out against the online censorship run by the FBI? Of course not, because everything centering around the current rogue intelligence community can be traced back to McConnell making deals with Democrat senators to stand aside from oversight if they secure his position of influence and affluence. Has he had anything to say by way of condemning the obvious political persecutions of all things Trump? Hell no. He's a cheerleader. Or what about the summer of love in 2020 with the Antifa, BLM rioting, looting, burning, and murdering? Nothing from Mitch. Hell, going back 10 or 15 years, what did he have to say about the Tea Party? Hint, nothing good. What about the financial meltdown back in 2008? Anything? Bueller? The reason it's important to point out what he did not say is because the doomsday cult, formerly known as the Democratic Party, is run by tyrants. They are led by Marxists. They operate a left-wing mob, and if the supposed leader of the supposed opposition party has nothing to say about their illegalities, then what hope is there to rein them in, to stop them, to prosecute them? Answer, there is no hope. The closet Marxists are now out of the closet thanks to the silence of the supposed opposition party led by Mitch McConnell. I mean, if the guy had any principles, if he was a God-fearing man, he would, at the very least, speak up against some of these things because they are morally wrong and or illegal. Common decency would require him to speak out, but he apparently has none. I want to take this opportunity of discussing this profoundly corrupt person who participated in the purposeful destruction of the country while enriching himself to talk to you about 2 long-term solutions to preventing the likes of Mitch McConnell from wreaking havoc on the American people ever again. Number 1 is term limits, and the 2nd is the repeal of the 17th Amendment. Despite the fact that Mitch's unfavorable ratings consistently run above 50% in Kentucky, he gets reelected over and over again because of the machine he manages, the campaign coffers he manages, and of course, he incredibly received Trump's endorsement the last time he ran. So let's circle back. Term limits. It's worthy of discussing this because the people who have to vote for the law to impose said limits are the very people who will be impacted by the law. Do you really think the majority of the House and Senate are going to restrict their own power? It's highly unlikely, but you never know. There may be a window of time in the future where both houses are populated by a majority of people with a soul who love the country and are serious about draining the swamp, so it's worthwhile keeping the conversation alive. Secondly, the repeal of the 17th Amendment is equally unlikely to happen, but I never waste an opportunity to provide a quick history lesson on the amendment to demonstrate how different the country would be if it was repealed. This is from my book, Critical Thinking. Under Article 1, Section 3 of the United States Constitution, two senators from each state were chosen by the legislature of each state. Senators represented the states essentially as state ambassadors to the federal government. In 1913, the progressives called for the election of senators by popular vote in each state. Thus, the 17th Amendment was born. Why was this a watershed moment in the country's history? Article 1, Section 3 of the Constitution provided the state governments with the means to have significant influence over Congress without taking away the federal government's enumerated powers. The state's appointment of senators was another check and balance against an overbearing, centralized federal government. Instead of our senators conferring with their respective legislatures for guidance and advice on potential votes, they are beholden to Washington lobbyists, consultants, donors, and advocacy groups. Simply put, United States senators are not concerned with the sovereignty of states from which they come because the states have very little influence over them. Consider the Obamacare vote. How many Democratic senators would have voted for that monstrosity if their state legislature could recall them? How many omnibus spending bills would pass if the senators had to face their state legislatures back home? How much money would be authorized and shipped to Ukraine? Do you think the people back home approved of 77,000 new IRS agents? Or a new FBI headquarters? Or allowing the border to remain open? I mean, the list goes on and on. Fast forward to today and ask yourself what means of influence the states currently have over the federal government. The answer is very little, if any, as Washington controls the purse strings via highway funding, education funding, welfare programs, and healthcare. Most states are beholden to the federal government for their very economic existence. Let me give you a little homework assignment. Go find your state's budget online. Look to see what percentage of revenue comes from federal sources. The answer for the average state is around 30%. So the states are literally monetary hostages of the federal government. Mitch McConnell is just another in a long line of geriatric octogenarians unwilling to give up the intoxicating power and wealth accumulated over their decades of mooching off the teat of the U.S. taxpayer. He's no different than Pelosi, Biden, Clyburn, Hoyer, Maxine Waters, member Harry Reid, Bernie Sanders, and Dianne Feinstein before her death. Do you remember how pathetic she was trying to hold on? What will be the legacy of Mitch McConnell? Mark Levin put it this way. He is a globalist war pig rhino who sold out Kentucky time and again for his donors and lobbyists, has gotten filthy rich on his corruption, and will be remembered as a sellout who was in the swamp way too long. Part of his legacy will be the over, what, $25 trillion in national debt that accumulated during his tenure? But the dominant theme of Mitch's legacy will be his silence in the face of evil, corruption, illegalities, unconstitutional acts, and America-destroying policies. And that's the truth about Mitch McConnell. Please subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform, share episodes with your friends, and support the podcast by shopping at truthquestshirtfactory.com.